So let's get over to you, Alice Albee. Good to have you with us, sister. Appreciate you so much. And really interested in what was posted on the DoddFrankUpdate.com website. Let's get into it. Alice?
Hi, Dave. First of all, a quick sound check. Is my sound okay this way?
You do. It's not quite as good as that big, massive blue Yeti that you bought. That sounds good, but I know you're more mobile, so this is good. We'll take you out. This sounds good.
All right, I'll go this way. This might be better. Okay, yes, and pardon everyone for my hoarse voice. I'm just getting over a bad cold here. So the CFPB did publish a request for information, and there's a really interesting take on this one. As you mentioned, you can read the Dodd-Frank update. They got a couple of thoughts from different folks there, but essentially they're asking for answers to several questions that are about particular fees causing hardship for consumers. And they're really looking for a lot of data from us as lenders. How are fees currently set? Who profits from the fees? Who benefits from the fees? And so one of the things that you have to keep in mind on these requests for information is they are responsible for making a case as to why they are doing this. And we just really don't see that in here. What is their goal? We know that there have been some conversations in the past about, we've all felt it in the industry, the increase in the credit report fees, and then they've also commented about title fees. But this is an RFI on all fees, not even though they call out those two as examples. So as a lender, when you're thinking about, or you're a broker, if you're in this industry and you're thinking about commenting, there really is a choice a company has to make on, all right, how much do I really want to tell them? And what direction do I want my response to be in? Because this is a very broad request. What is driving the recent price increases of credit report and credit scores is specific to that fee. But really, they're also asking about all closing costs and what have been the increases over the last several years and looking for data. So I'm curious to get thoughts from this group. I'm always a little cautious when an RFI feels open-ended, and I don't know what the objective is for this. So most RFIs, you have a sense of what the agency is trying to accomplish with that. You can make sure that your data and your comments frame to a particular goal that's important to the industry. And so I think as an industry, we have a lot of thinking to do to get together through things like the Mortgage Collaborative and MBA. This is one where I would say we should respond jointly so that we are sending a clear message on what we want the objectives to be. It's not one where random lenders firing out different thoughts or a loan officer chiming in is going to have any impact. So this is a very different type of ROI and one that lenders need to prepare for and I think collaborate on. I'll stop there, at least on this one, to get the group's thoughts.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Dave Kittle, you as the CEO of TMC, Mortgage Collaborative, taking a group of people to DC to talk to Chopra. Talk a little bit about that. I think first off, kudos to you, David. I love the fact that you're doing that. Having your voices heard. But to Alice's point, they're publishing that they are wanting to go out and get this RFP. What's your thoughts
RFI.
On it? RFI, excuse me, RFI. I said RFP, meant RFI. Thanks for correcting that.
Yeah, so we do a once a year trip. We have an advocacy group inside the Mortgage Collaborative. We're taking, I think it's about 14 to 16 of us will be in DC. We're going to meet with the GSEs and FHFA, Ginnie Mae, HUD, and tomorrow afternoon we'll be at the CFPB. Timely as it is, the real question
very
to me,
timely.
They're worried about closing costs. Right. And because they want to protect the consumer, yet the onerous regulations that are put on the lenders drive up the cost to originate the loan. And most of that gets passed through at some point or another. An interesting question. And to Alice's point, this is an open-ended RFI and you put it out there. And is it going to come back and slap you in the face for the information put out there? That's what
and
you
I
have
think to do. I'm sorry,
go ahead.
Dave. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I completely agree with you that as a lender, what my response would want to be is it's the regulations that have driven up the costs.
Hello?
And they want to go line by line down a loan estimate and a closing statement, go, okay, this is that fee. And it's almost like a deflection into, right? You're trying to go after vendors, which is a different animal altogether, as many layers as others have pointed out. And the real cost is in the regulations.
Every time it is. And of course, we can talk about the two big things we've mentioned it on here before. Biggest cost, it's not on the settlement statement, but it's cost what we're paying the loan officer comp is the elephant two in the room, and title insurance. That's where you can go after. I know the credit reports have gone up, but it's an insignificant cost overall compared to the, again, I'll use the term, onerous regulations on the back end that every lender, bank, credit union faces every single day. That's where the cost is.
Yeah. By the way, CFPB listens to this podcast. We're so grateful to have you in the side of the CFPB listening to us. We understand the charter that you have and applaud you for looking at helping keeping our industry safe and sound. But it's the bigger issue is, are you doing it in a way that is supporting and helping a healthier industry? Bill, you had some thoughts.
And to piggyback off of that, I think the responses from our industry have to be written both to the CFPB, but it also, there is going to be a large group of folks that will pile on and every fee, it's bad, it should go away. Part of the industry response has to be to that side of the equation and explain outside of the regulatory why the services and the underlying fees, obviously some of them credit reports gotten out of hand, but a lot of the other things, it's the services ultimately benefit the consumer. And you have to be careful about pushing back so hard. And one of the things that they've talked about is discount points. And there's several articles out there. Oh, discount points are bad. Well, do folks understand that if it weren't for discount points, there's a sizable chunk of folks that wouldn't be able to get a loan, right? Yeah. So are they really that bad?
And it's calculated to a predetermined formula.
Yeah.
It's not like we're going out there and just picking our own buy down fees. Yeah.
Discount points adjust the yield up or down or whatever it is. That's all it is.
Yeah. To our CFPB listeners, I think this is the part that's most disconcerting to those of us in the industry. It shows just such that part of this whole thing shows such a lack of understanding of the way our industry functions on that.
One of the comments too, if I could throw this out quickly, David, is a loan officer can't negotiate their price to make the deal. And all that does, when they do that, if they want to lower their commission, they can't do that to make the deal, which who's benefiting from them doing that? The consumer.
So from CFPB standpoint, with the credit report fees, they have gotten outrageous. There's no contention that that fee has increased exponentially and should get looked at.
And inexplicably.
We all have our suspicions as to why. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a couple of them. But I hope their expectation is not that lenders are going, okay, this fee needs to be looked at and could be changed. I think hitting on the big points, like you guys have said, what's the overhead that we're trying to cover because of the increasing expenses of constant audit being under constant scrupulous and the technology requirements to stay in compliance? It's just a lot of overhead. And you guys have talked about how much we have to try and get overhead down. We want to do the right thing by consumers. No one in the lending industry wants the consumer to have a problem misunderstanding fees. If we start bundling fees, then it's less transparency for the consumer. I think there's a lot of comments to be ferreted out here to make sure we are looking right. We want to make sure the consumer has full information. They're being charged fairly, but our hands are tied as a lender. If my credit provider ups the fee, if the title company ups the fee, I got to pass that on to the customer. I can't eat those charges. And so I think that's part of what they're trying to find out here.
Hopefully it's a legitimate education. Let's go out and get information. But I think it comes back to my point a little bit earlier. It gets disconcerting to me that they don't understand this, which means who are we hiring at CFPB? So, David, when you're sitting there in front of Chopra tomorrow, try to get some insights. I'd love to get you next week on the podcast commenting about that.
Certainly I will, but this is not for me to opine tomorrow, really. It's our lenders who are actually doing it.
Yes.
You know, and
3x5 cards, David. Give them the question in advance. Lead them.
What's affecting them every day. It's a really good dialogue face-to-face with those that are affected by the decisions that are made.
Yep. Mark.
Hey, there's nobody on this call, some close, but nobody on the call has been around as you, long as you and I have. And I have three pet peeves that I want to mention, and you've touched on every one of them. I have a pet peeve that title policy costs are going up when basically we insure their incompetency in putting together the title policy. Okay. Think about what we do. It's going
Sorry,
up.
Sorry, title insurance companies listening to this, but it's true.
Yeah, it's true. And then on the flip side, on credit reports, that's one of the most automated functionalities in the country. Still, we have errors in it, and it's still going up. And one that y'all might not have focused on, I want to let you know on. It's an actual subjective thing that a borrower might want to do. But if a borrower goes out today and orders an inspection through their realtor on their property, tell them what might be wrong with it, do you know those things have gotten up to $800 to $1,000 in some areas of the country? $800 to $1,000 to have a detailed property inspection on the house you're buying. That is about ridiculous too. And somebody's got to pay for that. The buyer does. And he didn't feel comfortable because the realtor sells him and says, you really need this to know what you're buying. And all those things contribute to this process we're getting into where less and less people are going to qualify and expenses get higher and higher. I don't know. Those are my big pet peeves.
Good pet peeves is a good soapbox to get up on and mount on. Alice, you were commenting in there. So any thoughts?
Oh, I agree. I think those are three great ones. So thank you, Mark, for pointing that out, right? Their fees go up, but we don't see necessarily an improvement in the error rates. And there's a lot of technology there. I think for the rest of the group, I think I'd be really interested to hear if you think it's smart that we do respond collectively, or if you have feedback for companies who do want to respond individually.
I get nervous about the individual feedback at this point, and I'm thinking this is where Mortgage Action Alliance app, where we could have our voice heard. But I really would like to get everyone's thought. I'm glad that what you're Kittle. So I think the other way to do it is go to your co-op. In this case, David's leading in a group. And so that's an organization. There's CHLA, Taylor Stark, good friend, who's really involved, just met with Chopra about some of this stuff last week. There's other groups, Lenders One, that is out there. And we need to come together, but we all need to be in somewhat coordination with the MBA. Would you agree with that, David?
Of course, I think everything needs to be coordinated with that, the realtors, the home builders, and all of it. But each one of us at different sizes of the organization only have the ability to take a small number in. We go, our advocacy group, we're not a PAC. We don't have lobbyists, and we don't go up to the Hill to meet congressmen and senators. We go meet our regulators, and that's more important to our lenders, the size of lenders that we have. TMC right now, I think whatever the volume ends up being, we're somewhere between 12 and 15% of the marketplace, which is nothing to sneeze at collectively inside.
Yes, that's significant. Yeah.
Alice, Union Home, they're a member of the Mortgage Collaborative. And Alice, I will tell you that got something. It's 3 o'clock tomorrow. So between now and then, shoot me an email with your concerns, anything you and Bill and your group want to articulate, and I'm happy to take it.
Good. All right. Bill's one of the founding members of TMC, and love Bill as a leader in the marketplace. Any other commentary on this? I think we've covered this. Pay attention to it. Get with the MBA. Get with your co-op, whichever one that you're a member of. Have these words in to David. Even if you're not a member of the co-op, David, can I say this? That could we give your email out so that people that are not a part of the co-op can send you feedback in advance of your meetings?
Gosh, depends on how much that is.
It could be a lot of feedback, but at least let's open the door for that to happen. I'm thinking is you're going to be next through there. So anyway, also gives you an opportunity to try to get them involved.
Right. The cost of it is they're going to get do you want to join? Respond email.
Yeah. Exactly right. Why are you not here? Why are you not being part of us? So anyway, very good. We're going to publish this email in the show notes here on this, and you're welcome to get a hold of the listeners. One other thing I want to talk about is the Northwest MLS not joining NAR settlement. They are breaking free of this. By the way, they're one of the first MLS. I said NMLS, Northwest Multiple Listing Service. They are not joining the NAR settlement. Now, that is really interesting. They were the first to react to the lawsuits. They came out and did some of the most proactive, I think, common sense things. So having started my career 50 years ago up in the Pacific Northwest. Kudos out to them. It's my first response.
I haven't had a chance to completely digest into it, but I will say when you think about why I wouldn't want to be in the main settlement is I feel that I don't owe that much money. I don't want to share in the payments. Is my understanding on how joining the settlement would work. To your point, Dave, if they've done things that have met what the suit is alleging, then maybe they feel they can get out of this for less money.
Yeah. And they also have done some very proactive things when the first lawsuit first showed up. They did some things proactively that everyone else was shell-shocked by and did not take action. So they've been very proactive in that. Pretty impressive. I bring that to all your attention, listeners, to your attention of this. We're going to put a link to this article in Real Estate News. We'll put a link to it in there. But I think this should be brought to each of your MLS, your multiple listing in your local community there, and say, hey, you do not necessarily have to join in on this NAR settlement. You do not have to. So if you haven't been proactive, maybe you should. But if you have been proactive, as the Northwest has been, MLS has been, then maybe not. Bill, any thoughts?
I don't understand enough of what they've done proactively from the beginning to really understand their benefits. But to your point, clearly, they feel like they're better off standing on their own.
Yeah, they feel very secure about it. And it's solid grounds for that as well. One of the last things I want to cover for today, it's a sensitive topic. It is the strength and the financial condition of our banking system. Every independent mortgage lender that's listening to this is subject to a warehouse line of credit. If we don't have warehouse lines, we're dead. I was recently quoted in an American Banker magazine, and then a couple of my comments got pulled out and republished by a number of people, and I don't believe we're in a systemic problem as far as warehouse lendings is at this minute. But there's an article, again, a link of which will be put in the show notes. And this one captured my attention big time because it says there are $517 billion in unrealized losses that could hit the banking system. And it says 63 lenders on the brink of insolvency. Now, Bill, let's get your comments on it, because I think for those that do not understand the mark-to-market of what's going on, I'd like to have you explain it for everyone.
Yeah, so banks that bought mortgages, treasury securities, and when rates were ultra low, have those.
By the way, can we alter that? It also almost like they had a choice to buy. They didn't have a choice. If I understand back then, the feds came in and says, you will buy these treasuries at this rate.
Correct. So banks that were buying treasuries at treasury's behest and buying mortgage-backed securities at the ultra-low rates, put them in their held for investment portfolio so they don't have to be marked to market.
Right.
Now the challenge is, as their liquidity needs have grown, there are more and more institutions that may have to sell some or all of their holdings for liquidity purposes. So now there's much more of a focus on what is the unrealized loss in their portfolio. And that number is staggering. And it is, where it can come in,
$517 billion.
If you're a bank and you've got commercial real estate exposure, for example, as you're unwinding a deal, you need liquidity, you may be forced to sell some of those securities. So again, that's the focus on how far underwater they are. The other connection to the mortgage banking world is if a bank, they're in warehouse lending and they love the warehouse business, and another event occurs where they need liquidity, they have two choices. They can unwind their warehouse business, which is one of the fastest ways to improve liquidity, or they can sell those securities, which are massively underwater.
it's like a slow death or sudden death. It's like when, and for those that are new to the industry that are listening to this podcast, I want to make sure when we say mark to market that we explain what that is. When you mark an asset to the market, you have an asset, you have your home, let's say it's worth this, but if there's a precipitous drop in that home, you don't realize that drop in the home until you go to sell that home. So a mark-to-market analysis is almost like an entry that is on the books that, and they're saying it's unrealized. They are not requiring them to report the mark of that asset, that treasury that they were asked in air quotes, forced to buy. And now they have it on their balance sheet and they go, oops, yeah, sorry, we made you do that. And I know these are deeply underwater. So I guess what? We're not going to require you to report the value of that today because it's a massive loss. But that's what this is all about. And your point is well taken. So a mark to market is marking a current value of a current asset you own, like a home, and to if you had to sell it. And you don't have to realize that until you go to sell it. But if you do have to sell it, that's when the proverbial crap hits the fan.
What we're missing here is, and everything there is correct, what we said a little few minutes ago, is that they're forced to buy, the value goes down, and on the back end, they raise the liquidity requirements, which means now they have to sell or close the warehouse lines down, one of the two things that were mentioned. So forced to buy, now forced to sell after the market goes down, total control, another onerous overreach by the government.
Yes. And it's almost the part that, again, blows my mind is this word, Bill, you said it says, I steer away from conspiracy theories, but it's almost like at some point in time you scratch your head, go, is this by design? Is there someone out there trying to destroy the system, our financial system? And I don't want to get in down that rabbit hole, but the bottom line is you can start drawing some really interesting conclusions as to the mess we find ourselves in with just this issue. And you say, why do we care? It's the consequence back to us IMBs, those of us that are independent mortgage bankers, IMBs out there, and the fact that you could, not saying will, but could face a warehouse shortage and a serious warehouse liquidity issue.
David, the key word in this is it's unrealized. So it's not realized yet. If you hold on to it, it's like my stock's gone down. You only take a loss on a stock if you sell it.
Yeah.
Warehouse, anything else, but they're being forced to sell it because they're raising the liquidity.
That's the point. Yeah. They were forced to buy it. And now we have an underwater thing. And now because of liquidity issues and they're raising the capital requirements, which goes into the Basel III, what's going on with Basel III is what's creating this whole conundrum is it's the unintended consequences. I'm going like, is anyone connecting the dots here? If they are, then that's much more nefarious in the implications. Sobering. This one is sobering, listeners. Is that okay? So what do we do? Do we sit and wring our hands about this and said, nah, you know what? Here's the things you can do. You need to get to know your warehouse lender. You need to talk to them. How is their solvency? Get to know the bank. We sometimes go to our warehouse lenders and we're just, please give me a warehouse line. Please, can I keep my, I love you guys. Everything's good. But we don't do the due diligence on the institutions that are backing them. And I think it's so important that we do that. That's if there's any takeaway from this, pay attention. Is the lender from whom you have a warehouse line one of the 63 lenders in this article that says on the brink of insolvency? Bill?
And Dave, just in general, if you're a senior leader in an organization, you ought to have a list of 10 things every day that you're starting off thinking, what if this happened? And have your plan Bs ready to go. Because,
yes,
you know, as we've seen with any change, things are happening at a faster and faster rate. So where X number of years ago, if there was a problem, you might have had a week to work it out. Now you're lucky if you have an hour or two.
Yeah.
So
great,
you
know, point.
You can't drive yourself crazy, but there've got to be the top 10 things that you always have a plan B ready to go at a moment's notice.
Yep. Very good point. Alice, let's get over to you. Any thoughts as you think and contemplate all that we've talked about today?
I love what Bill just said. I think it's a great thing to think through. When you think of what are the top 10 bad things at the CEO level, I think we've covered several of them on the show today to actually think about having on your list.
Yeah, I think so. Liquidity, warehouse liquidity, and some of the things that are going on. When that shows up, it's going to be a sudden event. And that's the thing that I think we need to have planning, but we can be proactive. We can get to know the financial institutions with whom we have our warehouse lines. Do your due diligence on them. If you don't feel comfortable with what they are, then you're going to be subject to whatever comes. But if you do your due diligence, we can go from there. A lot going on. David Kittle, kudos to you for taking a group of lenders off to DC. Thoughts and prayers. Have safe travel. And I'm praying that you have just real, those meetings are really effective. And I applaud what TMC is doing, what CHLA is doing, all the ones that are doing this advocacy. But most of all, we say thank you, MBA, for what you're doing, as it's, they got to help. If you haven't read, listeners, Bob Brooksmith's speech that he gave here a week or so ago, he did the best job of really outlining what a conundrum we have as an industry in this regulatory environment. One thing ties to another, and it's almost, you're just afraid to move to one way or the other because you think you solved this problem over here and you created another one right behind you. So interesting times, time to be in the mortgage industry.
One thing, it's not just the regulations coming out of DC. It's all the regulations,
all the states,
like in their states as well on top of it.
We've got more issues on the state level than ever before. Pay attention, folks, to this podcast. We'll be covering a lot of the stuff. Good conversation.